Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.
What to watch
on Point of View.
Our musicologist is back.
Hi. How are you doing?
We are so happy to see you. How are you?
I'm so happy to see you, Pamela. But I see you've been jet setting all over the place. Makanda. Sure.
Shade.
I mean, how do people keep up with Pamela Motene?
Shade. Oh my goodness. I love your theme today.
Yes, music from advertising. So I think, the reason why I chose this topic is because there's so many ways that people can generate an income from music. And mm-hmm. if you can get one of your songs on an advert, you're going to make a lot of money mm-hmm. because the advertisers want to tap into that thing, that popular culture consciousness that sells pop music, because it's an easy in, you know, like if you've got a big song that you can align your brand to, then you know that you're going to be generating money. Mm. And the cases that I chose today, you'll see that not only was it beneficial for the advertiser, but it was beneficial for the artist as well. Yeah. There's also this other thing with advertising, which is there are certain rights, like when you write a piece of music, the author of the song has rights in that song.
Yeah.
But once that song is converted from being a piece of music mm-hmm. to being sound, mm-hmm. there's rights in the sound as well. Mm. So the recording. Mm. And so a lot of advertisers, you'll see in adverts, they won't use the original.
Mm. Yes, they tweak it a bit.
They'll either tweak it or they'll get someone to cover it.
Yes.
Because then they don't have to use the original master recording.
Exactly.
They can just use, they can just get like Kippy off the side of the road mm. and he can do a version of Heard It Through the Grapevine, and then they don't have to pay that fee for the usage of the actual recording. Because, I mean, you can imagine, you've got a song like Heard It Through the Grapevine, which is iconic. I mean, it's one of Rolling Stone's greatest songs of all time. Mm. It's the song itself has been inducted into the Grammy Hall of Fame twice. Once, the Marvin Gaye version, and the next time, it was the Gladys Knight version. So you've got a song that's got like it's got legacy, it's got pedigree. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine, I want to use the Marvin Gaye version. Mm. Oh, well, that's a 3 million unit selling track. Mm. And it comes with pedigree. Mm. So you're going to have to pay big money to be able to use that song.
Yeah.
And so it's easier just to get Sheldon to go and record a version of Heard It Through the Grapevine and then use that in the advert and save the money that I would have paid to use the pedigreed version of that song in my advert. But obviously the people that have been using these songs in adverts are big corporates, and they can afford, and they don't mind paying the big money to be associated specifically with the Marvin Gaye version of the song, you know, for example. This song was originally not recorded by Marvin Gaye. The original version was recorded by The Miracles, and The Miracles were a Motown band that featured one of the founding fathers of Motown, Smokey Robinson.
Yeah.
So Smokey Robinson was one of the OGs, one of the, like, employee number two at Motown. And he's the one that gave Motown the startup capital to start.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, he gave Berry Gordy $800 to start Motown. And they built Motown on the back of Smokey Robinson and The Miracles. And they did the first version of Heard It Through the Grapevine. But and then about a year later, Marvin Gaye did a version of the song. So 1967, he did a version of the song. But it was a slow burn. The song didn't do well initially. And eventually it went to number one in the United States, which was quite a thing. It was number one for 7 weeks in 1968 to 69, in like a time where black artists weren't getting mainstream recognition. And so Marvin Gaye goes to number one. And it's this big song. Now, since then, the whole tradition behind the song and this whole Heard It Through the Grapevine wording was that the guy who wrote the song, Barrett Strong, he was walking down the street and he heard someone saying, "I heard it through the grapevine," which means like I heard something in passing. And the tradition, and he was like, "Oh, I need to write a song about this." But the tradition came from the Civil War in the late 1800s in the United States, where the slaves weren't allowed to communicate with each other. And so the way that they used to communicate was through like a human telegram kind of situation, like a broken telephone. Mm. And so that's where the term "heard it through the grapevine" emerged. Mm. Anyway, so then he writes a song, it's a big hit. And in 1985, it's used in a commercial for the first time. And the success of the song in the commercial revives the success of the single. It was for a Levi Strauss advert. And so they re-released the song. Motown re-releases the song in 1985. So it's like 30 years after the original release. Mm. And then in 1986, it gets used in an advert again. This time, the most famous version was by a group of claymation characters called the California Raisins. And the whole concept behind the commercial was, well, they became like a merchandising phenomenon in the United States. And then they also became an animated series. But the whole concept behind the California Raisins was to assist the California Raisin Board to sell more raisins. And so they use this "Heard It Through the Grapevine" song to sell raisins. And in the process made these California Raisins these big stars and revived the success of the Marvin Gaye version of "Heard It Through the Grapevine."
Well, that's a fantastic story. So our next song is?
So our next song is by one of my all-time favorite divas, Etta James. She was part of this record company called Chess Records in the 1960s as well. The original version of the song was recorded by Glenn Miller in 1941, but the Etta James version was in 1960. Now, Etta James, I mean, Beyonce has tried to do this song.
You heard, huh? Everybody, I mean, I wish I had seen your face. I wish the Beehives had seen your face.
I'm surprised they haven't been cancelled yet. But anyway, so Etta James did the original version. And it's just, if you listen to the song, there's just so much emotion, like in the song. She doesn't have like the biggest range. She's probably an alto, like a low, very soulful voice. And you hear the song and you can hear like the gospel roots of the song and the urgency of the song, the way she does it. The Glenn Miller version is obviously a lot more like jazzy, mainstream jazz. But the Etta James, you can hear like the plantation in her voice. It's a beautiful song. Anyway, this song went to number 47 in the United States, but it sold over 2 million units, and it's considered like an anthem. The song was used subsequently in various adverts, like the Cadillac advert in 2016, Applebee's pasta in 2018, and the iconic Sainsbury's Christmas advert. So every year, Sainsbury's, which is a UK-based, Woolworths kind of store, does Christmas is sharing campaign. Since 2013, they've been doing this campaign where they choose a song and they get a famous person in and they revive the careers of all these people. Like like a more recent one was they had Elton John do one. Then they had I forgot her name, but she rocking around the Christmas, Peggy Lee. So they had her do one. And so they used this Etta James version in one of these commercials, and it just revived the success of the song. And that is our next song.
9, 5, 9. Rhythm and beat.
No very need popular. To introduce who this is.
Yeah, but before I get to that, there was one little story that I really wanted to tell about Etta James.
Yes.
So when she was 90, she started her career when she was very young. She was 15 years old, and she had an affair with B.B. King when she was 16 years old.
Sure.
And she always said that B.B. King wrote a song about her called Sweet 16, when she was 16 years old. But anyway, at the age of 19, she met Elvis Presley, and she loved Elvis Presley and said that, you know, he was one of the most polite people that she had ever met. And she fell even more in love with him about 15 years later, when she heard that. So she had one of her very close friends, a guy called Jackie Wilson, very famous in the 1960s and 70s. He was in a convalescent home. He was not doing well. And she heard that Elvis Presley had put him in a home that would be more suitable for someone of his caliber, mm-hmm. and paid for all his medical treatment. So he moved him into this amazing facility. Home mm-hmm. in 1976, and Elvis died in 1977. And Elvis's estate continued to pay for Jackie wow. Wilson's treatment post his passing for another 10 years, because Jackie what? Wilson lasted for another 10 years after Elvis Presley's passing.
Isn't that
and,
something?
Yeah, and so Etta James always like loved Elvis Presley because wow. he had helped out one of her best friends.
Wow, isn't that incredible?
But anyway, so Bill Withers, yeah, this guy, I love an underdog. And Bill Withers was the ultimate musical underdog. Number one, he didn't start out like Etta James at the age of 15 in the music business. He went to the army first, and only in his 30s did he get his first record deal, and he struggled with depression. But the output of music was phenomenal. And then after a while, he was like, I don't want to do this anymore. And he just disappeared from the music industry, and no one really heard from him after that. So his discography is not a very long one, but it's got some of the most exceptional music. I mean, this song is considered, once again, one of Rolling Stone's top 500 songs of all time. This was released in 1977, and it was written by Bill Withers and a guy called Skip Scarborough. Anyway, it was from his sixth album, Menagerie, and it holds the record for the longest, one of the longest held notes in music history, 18 seconds. And every time I hear the song, I think of my friend RJ Benjamin, who, when we were studying music together, his whole thing was he wanted to do Lovely Day with the 18 seconds with no breath in between, because everyone always takes a breath in between because it's just hard. Such a long hold.
Yeah.
Anyway, he achieved his goal, but I was like, I'm not even going to try to compete
goal.
With that. Like, I've got other things that I'm
worried about,
but that is not one of them. Anyway, so this song went to number 30 in the United States and number 7 in the UK. But it's been used in so many different adverts. There was a tea advert in 1995. There was a Gap advert in 1999. There was a Good Morning Football advert in 2020. And in the same year, there was a Pandora jewelry advert with the song in it and an Allstate insurance advert with the song in it. The interesting thing is that The Gap advert was filmed by a very famous music video director called Hype Williams. Mm. And if you watched music in the 1990s, music videos in the 1990s, Hype Williams was all over the place. He did the music video with Janet Jackson and Busta Rhymes. He did music videos for R. Kelly, for Jay-Z. The names just went on and on. And this was a Hype Williams produced music video. When the song was used in the advert, the demand for the original version of Lovely Day just went through the roof. Another interesting fact about this song is that the guitarist playing in the session for the song is a guy called Ray Parker Jr.
Yes.
And he played on the song. Now, Ray Parker wow. was this massive yeah. star in the 1980s.
Yeah.
So in 1977... people still didn't know who he was, but he landed up becoming a yeah. big star.
Yeah.
He did Ghostbusters,
yeah,
the original version of wow. Ghostbusters.
On the street, on the air.
So yeah, that song's 2012, and the reason why she wrote that song, she said she was inspired by the birth of her child in Egypt, but mm-hmm. she was in Egypt. When she was inspired to write the song, she'd also just gotten married to Swiss Beatz, and she decided to write the song Girl on Fire. And you can hear although it's an R&B song, you can hear like elements of like almost like an Eastern sound in the music. Although it's not like very evident, but you can hear that the origins are not like a traditional R&B origin to the song. So it's very clever in its writing, because it's like referencing elements of what the inspiration behind the song is. She was so inspired by the birth of her child and the marriage to Swizz Beatz that she wrote a 3-song suite of this piece of music, where there were 3 versions of the song. This version is the Nicki Minaj version, so you heard her rapping in the beginning, and then there's the original pop version, and then there's a remix version. Anyway, she was super inspired to write the song. It went to number 11 in the United States, number 5 in the UK. And then in 2023, which is like 11 years later, Lloyds Bank in the UK decided they're going to use it in an advertising campaign. And all of a sudden, people are listening to the song again, which is really cool because, I mean, as someone who loves an underdog, there's nothing like the revival of a song. You know, like a song that you thought was gone, or that it didn't do as well as you thought it was going to do, and then all of a sudden it's revived because of an association to something. And I just love the idea that, you know, people are, especially with popular culture, people are constantly like tapping into this greater thing, this greater like messaging. And that's why I find these people so fascinating, because not anyone can be famous. And the only reason why you become famous is because you're able to tap into the zeitgeist. And so that is what the beauty of someone like Alicia Keys is, who's not only done it once, she's done it repetitively. And then some people say, oh, it's because you're famous. No, but you don't just remain famous. I mean, some people have one hit and disappear. So the fact that you can maintain that fame is
harder.
It's because you are in tune with something that's resonating with people. And I mean, and music and resonance are two big things. You know, like your music's vibrating at a level that is connecting with a vast audience, where people are understanding. And why would a corporate not want to tap into that?
I like that. Lyra, I feel good.
So Lyra, oh my gosh. So, you know, I know Lyra. Yes. I mean, I met her just as she was transitioning from 999 Productions to Sony, and we were all like hustling together in the record studios at the same time. It was 340 Mill. It was me. It was RJ Benjamin. We were all like hustling at the same time. And that's when I got to meet Lyra for the first time. And I was always like completely like struck by, number one, her poise. She had a phenomenal poise. Well, she's still with us. So she has phenomenal poise. And like, razor sharp focus. Like, I've never met anyone who's as focused as she is. Like, she knew from the beginning, this is what I'm going to do. I'm getting this money. I'm putting this money aside. I'm going to do this. I'm doing that. She was like, the rest of us were like having a party in the studio, and she was sitting like working out figures and where the money was going to go to and how she was going to use
so
the money.
Interesting.
And so I was fascinated. And actually, the one time we were all just being like boys, and she was sitting at the back of the studio like working out her figures, and I went to go sit with her and I was like, what are you doing? And then she said, no, man, you've got to take care of business. That's the number one thing. You've got to take care of business.
Isn't that interesting?
And I was like, wow, she's got the right mentality around this thing. But anyway, this song, Feel Good, was from a sophomore album. The first album was written through 999 Productions, and she often says that she doesn't know like how she feels about that first album, like her connection to it. Like, she doesn't,
I get it. Yeah. I totally get it. Yeah.
But with the second album, she feels a very strong connection to the album. And that specific song was written, came out of a lot of pain in that transition from 999 to Sony. And she felt that through that pain, she wrote the song, Feel Good, which is so ironic because, like, it's almost like you're trying to lull yourself into believing that, you know, everything's going to be fine, although you're going through a lot of pain. It's like there is light at the end of the tunnel. And so that was what the song was about. And it just blew up. Like, at that time, 2006, it was everywhere. The song was all-encompassing. It eventually won 3 SAMA Awards, one in 2007, one in 2008, and one in 2009, which meant that the song, like, because if you know anything about the SAMAs, the song can you're only eligible if the song is released within that year.
Yeah.
Which meant that the song kept on growing legs from 1 year to the next and metamorphosizing into something else. And that's why I kept on getting nominated, because it would be re-released and then be re-eligible for an award.
Isn't
so once as a music video, once as the song, once as a remix of the song. So, so she won 3 SAMA awards for it. But and then, obviously, with a song that had such immense traction, she then decided, well, she was approached by DSTV to include the song in one of their summer campaigns.
Mm.
And so the song was used in a DSTV campaign where, you know, where her song was highly featured.
Wow.
And she was even featured in the campaign.
Wow. Michael Jackson.
So this song is a super fascinating song because there's so much story around this specific song. It is a seminal moment in popular music history. And the reason for that is because it came out of Thriller, but Thriller, once again, was a slow burn. People didn't immediately jump onto the album. The first song from the album was The Girl Is Mine, which was a duet with Paul McCartney. And the song went, it did well. It went to number 2. But it wasn't like that you want to come like blasting out of the I forgot the horse analogy, but you want to come blasting out of there. And it didn't. It was like a number 2, it's a bit of a damp squib. Anyway, so this was the second song. And it probably wouldn't have done as well, but it was then featured in Motown 25, where Michael Jackson performed in front of like 50 million people on television, and he launched the moonwalk. And people were just blown away. Like, how is this man floating on stage? It's just unbelievable. And people, the hype of the song just dragged it to number 1. And it was this massive song, 20 million units sold internationally. And for the first time, MTV, which was a fledgling television station at the time, were like, actually, maybe a black artist on MTV is a feasible thing. Because up to that point, they'd been blocking black musicians.
Yeah.
And so they were like, actually, maybe we should look at putting more black artists on MTV. And so the music video for the song went on to MTV, and Thriller became the biggest selling album of all time. Over 100 million records sold. So it's still the record holder to this very day. And so the song was inspired by letters that Michael Jackson was getting from fans, specific crazy fan, who was saying that he was the father of her child. Michael had never met this woman, and she then kept on sending letters. And then there was a letter where she said that she was going to commit suicide if he didn't come to her. Then she said that she was going to kill the baby, and that Michael needed to kill himself on a specific day so they could be in heaven together.
Oh.
And eventually they discovered that this woman was in a psychiatric hospital and she was 50 shades of crazy. But anyway, so that was the whole story behind the song. But even bigger than that, in 1984, Michael Jackson's brothers had this thing. Michael Jackson decided they needed to separate from his brothers because he needed to do his own thing. He needed to form his own identity. And so that's when he went solo and left the brothers behind. And he was like, you know, you guys do you, I'm going to do me. But the guys did not know how to hold on to their money. Mm. They didn't learn out of the Leroy book of like how to control your money. And so every time they came into problems, they were like, Michael, don't you mind going on the road with us and doing a tour? Anyway, so they came to Michael in 1984 and they said, listen, we want to do a tour. It was called the Victory Tour. Pepsi decided that they were going to sponsor the tour. Pepsi said, we will sponsor the tour on one condition, that we can use Michael Jackson's Billie Jean in a Pepsi commercial.
Hmm.
Anyway, so Michael says, okay, fine. They set up the whole music video. Michael's walking down these steps and there are these pyrotechnics and they blow up in his face. He's rushed to hospital. He has third degree burns and he has to have reconstructive surgery for the first time. And a lot of people say that that's when Michael Jackson got addicted to painkillers and plastic surgery at the same time. So not only was it a seminal moment in popular music history, Billie Jean, but it was also a seminal turning point in Michael Jackson's own personal journey.
It's been so wonderful having you back.
Thank you.
We look forward to another edition of this next week.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Sheldon.
Thank you, Pamela.
Thanks, guys. We'll be back tomorrow. No, not tomorrow. We're back on Monday at 8. 9 5 9
rhythm and beat. Click kaya959.co.za to download the Kaya Biz podcast. What to watch on Point of View.